Homestyle Green, episode 212. Don't build a garden shed to live in. Build a beautifully crafted home. This week, I talk about how with Ian Chamberlain of Chamberlain Homes. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. This week on the show, I'm speaking with Ian Chamberlain from Taupo. Ian moved to New Zealand after working in the UK for a couple of decades as a builder, and he's also a carpenter and a joiner. And as he describes on his website, Chamberlain Homes, he takes pride in crafting homes, and that's a tribute to his skill and experience as a cabinet maker and a joiner. We talked about his journey towards creating passive houses and highly efficient homes, airtight buildings in the kind of alpine environment of Taupo. Anyway, before we get into today's show, I just want to do a quick shout out to a couple of sponsors of the show. This episode of Homestyle Green is brought to you by Lab Design. Lab Design stands for Livable, Authentic, Bespoke Design and Consulting. Check them out at labdesign.com.au. Lab Design have certified passive house designers and degree qualified building designers to assist you with a range of design services, from feasibility studies and 3D rendering through to construction documentation. They have a full range of passive house design services, including PHPP energy modeling and thermal bridge analysis, to make sure your future building performs the way it should. Check them out today for performance-based building design that just makes sense. labdesign.com.au. This episode is also brought to you by Enduro Builders. Enduro Builders are Australia's most sought-after builders of high-performance and sustainable homes. Just take a look at their stunning projects by visiting endurobuilders.com.au. With bases in both Western Australia and South Australia, Jackson and his team at Enduro Builders have proven their focus on bridging the gap between sustainability and cost. Chat with them today to see how they can help you achieve your goal of creating a home that really performs and will provide you with the true comfort that you deserve now and into the future. Whether it's a low energy home or a full certified passive house, Enduro Builders are a great option for your project. Check them out and contact them today at endurobuilders.com.au. Now let's get on to this week's episode with Ian Chamberlain from Chamberlain Homes. I started out by asking Ian to describe Taupo for us.
It's a small tourist town next to the biggest crater lake in the southern hemisphere. With snow-capped mountains at the other end of the lake.
Yeah.
So when you're sitting on the beach at the lake, you've got this. You've got a lake which is 40 kilometres across in front of you, and then in the distance you see a mountain range. And in the winter, obviously, there's plenty of snow, and that's where you can go skiing. So it's a lovely, beautiful, small town of 21,000. Goes up to about 40,000 to 50,000 around Christmas and holiday periods, because over half the houses here are holiday houses. So
yeah wow, it's an interesting dynamic place, and one of the coldest parts of the North Island, because you're up relatively high, so you're sort of alpine-ish.
Yeah, 355 metres above sea level.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we get similar climates as you do down in the South Island. So you do need to think about that when you're building whatever you're building as well.
Yeah. And so how long have you been a builder, Ian?
37 years. So I first did my training in the UK. Mm-hmm. And did all types of construction in the UK, a lot of work at the big airports, fit out stuff, did some log cabins through to some new builds, we did the first four-story timber frame apartment building in the UK a few years ago, and then came over here probably 24 years ago now, I think. Yeah, 24 years ago, I came over to New Zealand and been running my business here on and off ever since, really.
Was it relatively easy for you to transfer and jump straight into the building industry here?
Probably took about a year to bring yourself up to speed with how things are done here, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Looking at things here, when I first turned up, I went, they go, oh, this is how we build houses. I go, well, this is how we build garden sheds in the UK. But this is not a house. So, yeah. So I suppose going from a two-skin building to a single-skin building is obviously a lot more dynamics around weatherproofing on a single-skin building. And so it took a little while to get your head around. And I always say, yeah, about a year, because I've brought a few people from overseas here, and I reckon it takes me about a year to bring them up to speed with how we do things here.
Oh, so you've brought other builders to join you from the UK?
Other people have come from the UK, or we've had other people from other countries work for us at times. I'd say that.
The expats attract to each other.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we've had journeymen as well from Germany.
Yeah, come awesome.
Work for us because, you know, they got some great skill sets as well, which is really good.
Yeah. You mentioned there's single skin and double skin. And for those that aren't familiar, I've only seen a standard timber frame wall, 90 mil pine with some cladding on the outside, lining on the inside. What does a double skin wall typically look like?
A double skin is obviously a lot of places around the world, they have a double skin. So the outer layer is designed to get wet and the water to penetrate, and you've got a cavity to stop the water tracking across. So your inner layer is not designed to get wet, but your outer layer can get wet. And so the idea is the airflow goes up the cavity, which will dry out if any water does penetrate the outer layer. Well, obviously, if you've got a single skin, you can't have any water penetrating that, really. I suppose these days in New Zealand now, they have gone to a cavity system, but it's just a 20 mil batten, which is slightly different for the cavity systems I was used to, 75 mil upwards. And especially if they had insulation in the cavity, then they would be a lot bigger.
Yeah, right. And that outer skin, would that be a structural element as well?
It can be. So if a traditional builds, I suppose I used to use in the UK, could be block or brick. But the newer stuff that's happened probably over the last 30 years has been timber frame being the structure, and it might have an outer layer that could go on the outer, which could be tile hung. It could be brick, which is actually just basically a facade at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's a water screen. It's not, you know, it might not be structural.
But the important thing that you mentioned there is that it's designed, it's assumed that it will get wet, and not only get wet on the surface, but some moisture will find its way through to the cavity in between.
Yeah, that's the way it's designed. And so, and obviously then you've got air flow running through that cavity, which is then drying it out. And the way that the two walls are linked, they're designed so that the water cannot track from the outer wall to the inner wall. So that inner wall then obviously just stays your dry level or dry barrier or whatever you like to call it, I suppose.
Even if there's insulation in there?
Even because the insulation could be insulation which is designed to actually deal with moisture.
Right.
So you obviously can get bats that are designed so that they take on moisture and then dry out with the air flow through as well.
Yeah. So you arrived here, you learned how to build sheds that people live in, and did that for a while. You've done a huge range of work with Chamberlain Building and also furniture as well. Are you a joiner, or is that just an interest?
No, I'm trained. I suppose originally when we used to do our training, it used to be carpentry and joinery, and so right. We would do everything from making the stairs and windows and fitting them and building the houses to put them in as well.
Yeah.
So my skill set's in that range, and the people we employ a mixture of people. So if I've been trained in New Zealand more recently, they will just be a carpenter.
Yeah, yeah.
If they were old school, they would be a carpenter and joiner. We have got carpenters, joiners, carpenter joiners, and we've got cabinet makers. So on our team, we've got a right mixture, which really helps with the quality of build, because if you're a joiner, your tolerances are completely different to what a carpenter's build. Initially, some of the guys who we actually, often some of our joiners, we were actually training them up for building as well, so that we actually get a good level of quality right across our board. A tolerance with a carpenter might be 1 or 2 mil if they're cutting some framing. Well, a joiner would cut it, you know, exactly right.
Yeah.
So that's always good to have that on the team as well.
And I imagine as a joiner, you'd have to be aware of expansion and contraction and timber moving as well, and allowing for joints.
Yeah, you have to think about your materials that you're using. And I suppose that comes, we see more movement actually in the furniture that we might build.
Right.
And you have to think about that a lot more in that environment, right from to how you actually would store your timber and what temperatures you would need to keep it more balanced. It's the same as a house that, the more balanced you can keep that building or that house or whatever it is, the less movement you will get in it. I mean, obviously we have earthquakes in New Zealand, so that does actually give us quite a bit of movement at times. But between summer and winter, if you can actually keep your structure, your building, a more constant temperature the whole way through, your materials won't move so much. But obviously if they're going from minus 10 to plus 30, you're going to get a heap of movement. Timber being a great example, that moves quite a lot between summer and winter, picks up the extra moisture. Obviously, if you've got timber fixed to steel work, where steel doesn't move the same as that timber does, and then you've got to think about all the other bits and components on your outside your building. I mean, where we live, we have one of the biggest UV breakdowns in the country, so that breaks down materials. The sun, if you use the wrong colors on the building, it heats up too much, and certain products aren't designed to do that, so that can cause you more issues as well. So you've got to think about all these components when you're working with them.
I can see the relevance of your joinery in some of the images you've got there and the recent builds. I quite like what you say, that if you can't buy it, you make it. And I guess that's the other advantage of having that skill as a joiner. If you can't find a piece of furniture or a client wants something bespoke, you can make it.
Yeah, that's really, really good. And I suppose one of the things we like, I suppose, is we're not your box builder. You know, if you come to us, you're coming to us because we're going to actually educate you through the whole process, and we're actually going to build you something that is going to last and is going to be different.
Yeah.
I suppose is a nice way of putting it. And so people often come to us because, like you say, they can't find something, or they've got an idea of something, or they might have seen it overseas or somebody else. And so, yeah, we can come up, we can make that for that person, or just sometimes that can be some nice features in the house or the actual commercial building or whatever we're doing. the advantage is we can do that in-house as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
Now, tell me about one of your recent projects, because I think this is one that popped up on my social media at some point. It's to describe it as a near passive house. It's not certified, but you did do a blower door test, and it's got quite a number of interesting features about it. How did that project come about?
Yeah, so that came about because there was a passive designer got involved in that from Valhalla Living, Kim Forberg. So he was involved in that, and he got us involved to actually help execute the build on it. So the customers already looked at going down passive route. The issue was the actual design of the building.
Are they Kiwis, or have they?
He's originally from England, an engineer from England, but yeah. Been here for 45 plus years. They just wanted a nice, comfortable house to live in, and they were going to go down the full passive, but the design didn't quite work out. I mean, the building's basically three boxes joined with two corridors, and the building's like 45 meters long. So if you stand at one end of the building and look down from the one bedroom end, through the corridors, through to the main living area, through another corridor, through down to the office and master bedroom end. So to actually get that certified passive would have been really hard, because you've got a lot of outside wall areas. So what we decided to do in the end, we're working with the customers, was we would work to get it as close as we could to a passive house, even though we couldn't certify it passive.
Yeah.
And so we made sure, you know, upspec'd everything on the way through to make sure that it would perform the best that we could. And they've been finding it's been great to live in.
Had you worked with Kim previously from Valhalla?
We'd done some communications and helped him out on odd bits and pieces over the years. And the advantage with Kim, he's got a lot of knowledge on that side of things. And we managed to me and my staff picked up a lot of knowledge in that particular project, which we've been helping go forwards on other projects since. And some of that has been really helpful for us to try and educate customers where we think they should be going.
Yeah, what sort of things?
Well, I suppose a good way of talking about this is, if a customer comes to us originally, ideally we'd like them to come to us originally, and then we would talk with them about a section they're maybe going to buy, for starters. Then when we would look at how that suits with the sun. I suppose the issue we have here, everyone buys their sections around here for the views, and often the views are the wrong direction for the sun.
Yeah.
And that doesn't quite work for orientation. So we try and educate them on, you need to be thinking about using the natural energies out there to actually try and heat your house.
Yeah.
We talk through about making sure that you're building your house, or your building, or whatever you're building, so that it's going to last. It's going to use a minimal amount of energy to actually service that, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So keep a nice livable temperature all year round. So that's whether it's heating or cooling. So if you can go passive, ideal. But the issue, I suppose, we have in New Zealand at the moment, the building code is so far behind and so minimal.
Yeah.
But our building code up to passive is a long way. Ideally, if we could bring that building code up to a more standard, like some of the building standards in Europe, then it wouldn't be such a big jump from the building code to passive. So often it's a journey. So we're having to educate the people what's worth doing on their on their new build. And so we will have conversations with them about upspecing your windows, your slab, your walls, your roof, all those components. And then we will back that up and we'll get them to watch the video called Upspec Your Build, which is done by the Eco Design Advisory New Zealand. So we use that because then that sort of backs up what we've told them.
Yeah.
Then we give them other materials and educate them. Often we have to educate the designers and the architects as well on the journey, because quite a few of those still seem to be building more minimum building code rather than actually thinking about upspecing and bringing those buildings so they won't use so much energy in the long run.
Do you find that's a challenging conversation where you're trying to educate the architect?
Yes, it can be at times. We point them in different directions and say, here's some information here. Often what we have to do, if we can actually persuade the actual customer about the pros and cons, and I suppose we talk about, I say to them, your actual structural components of your build, you're not likely to change. So you're outside of your building, you're not likely to change. So spend the most money on that. And your kitchens and your bathrooms, where people normally spend most of the money, well, that you can change further down the track if you want to. So think about the actual overall of your build, and then think about how big does that build need to be? Everyone has a tendency, they want to build a massive house, and I go, well, okay, think about the maintenance on that build. How much maintenance do you want to do? And one of the conversations I have with them about that, I go, on a building, whether it's a residential house or it's a commercial building, your maintenance, you need to allow 10% of the value for every over 10 years. So think about that in your budget, because you need to actually keep that your biggest asset at the best standard. And the only way of doing that is actually making sure that you do spend that on your maintenance every 10 years.
Yeah, which for a lot of people could be, you know, $80,000 every 10 years.
Exactly. And that could be from painting, from cleaning, just to keep it up a good standard. And the other way I go to them, I go, so if you spent $500,000 on a car, I say, would you wash it? And they go, yeah. And I go, would you service it? They go, yeah. Well, why don't you do that on your house?
Yeah.
And they go, oh. I said, you know, the only way of keeping your biggest asset how it should be is making sure you do regular maintenance.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you mentioned the orientation to the sun. Now, you've also added, you went to quite a high level of air tightness on this build. Is that something you'd done a bit of before?
We hadn't done much of that before. Kim had and talked us through that and guided us on that. And that was really critical. And I think that that's showing it was worth doing that, because the performance of that build now is working really well. And I suppose that for us was a really good education. So we think about that on any of our builds now, making sure that we're using good products in those builds to actually make it easier. Because
were the clients on board with an airtight construction?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were at times, and then other times they would go, oh, well, we want to put a conventional fire in. Well, why do you need a conventional? Oh, because it looks nice.
Yeah. So yeah.
You've got those conversations. You're going backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
With.
Yeah. And you have ended up with a log burner in there.
Yep.
And quite a tall chimney. Is that a special flue sourcing from the outside?
Yeah, it's sourcing the air from it drags the air from outside back down into the fire. Yeah. Otherwise, and I think you'll find they still find if they decide to put the fire on, I think they put it on a couple of times.
Right.
In over, I think it's 2 years now.
Yeah.
So a couple of times. And they said, then you have to open the doors and windows.
But so, it looks nice. It does look nice. And
exactly. And I suppose that's what, if you, people often have got used to stuff, they've been brought up with stuff.
Yeah. And they do have a substantial door/window to open there, don't they? Is that one whole half of the lounge room almost open?
Yeah,
opens
so
up?
The actual is it's a triple glazed oak doors, which are so it's 8 meters across. So it goes back 2 meters each side. They pull back, which is lovely to. And interesting it's that concept of talk I've been at, what you've done more recently, Matthew, where people love that indoor outdoor flow.
yeah.
And that's what why they want that. The Kiwis are really into that.
I can see the appeal, you know, that is a beautiful outlook. You've got this amazing, I mean, Taupo is a stunning place and you want to feel connected to that. That's part of the value of being there. So I can totally empathize with the desire to have that. Just be interesting to see how often that does get fully open, the whole 8 meters.
Yeah, I've been there a couple of times and they've had it open, but I know what you mean. The amount of days, in often it's quite an exposed site. Then you get the winds. And it's nice to have even just the glass, I suppose. So even when it's shut, you've still got that beautiful view, which is really nice.
Was that an imported window, or where did you get all the windows and doors from?
Yeah, so they came, Valhalla Living supplied those.
Right.
And they came from Lithuania.
Right.
They're lovely, lovely doors and windows. They had an aluminium outer on it, which matched him because the cladding was a colour steel.
Yeah.
So
I imagine the windows would have been a substantial part of the overall cost.
They're a reasonable amount. They were probably, they might have been 12%, I suppose.
Okay, not too bad.
No.
And so is that a cost-effective option to import them?
It is at the moment because there are a couple of manufacturers in New Zealand. The costs are still quite high for ones that are actually manufactured here. Ideally, we would like to use products which are manufactured in New Zealand, because otherwise you're helping with the climate change. You want to reduce that climate change. So we're always looking for products that suit. And it often can be quite tricky, I suppose.
Yeah. Other than the air tightness, what else was a big challenge for you on this project?
I think originally the whole site was quite an interesting one, because the first time we went to the site, basically it was a big slope,
right?
And the customer actually, they. I'm trying to think how much they moved. A heap of stuff. So, they built the platform halfway up a hill, I suppose, is a nice way of putting it.
Right. You've got some early photos there. You can see the slope behind the house. So was that the gradient of the whole hill?
Yes. And so the building platform was then actually, and the track or the road was all moved. The soil and pumice from down the bottom was moved up to the top to build the platform. Initially, over about 6 months prior to we started construction, That did make it quite challenging as well, because of the track getting up to the house was challenging for getting anything there.
Yeah, right.
So the big window we were talking about came in a container. The container truck had to stop at the bottom. We had to build a ramp to get it out of the container, another truck to get it up the hill. So there were some challenges around that build, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you always get a few challenges. But
yeah.
We ended up with some nice features. And going back to what you were talking about, materials and that movement, I suppose, the floors and the ceilings in there were all a timber that they had actually milled the customer off their own farm originally. So that was really nice to use. So obviously we had to get that down to a good moisture content, check the moisture contents on the slabs and stuff before we could actually lay that. But it's been working really well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that ceiling, because it looks amazing. Is that macro carpet?
No, it's I can't even remember what timber is now. Not macro carpet. It's I can't remember what. I don't want to say, because I could probably get it wrong. Timber it was, but yeah, so basically they had a stack of timber on there, and they basically got it milled, and then got it all run out so that we could use it. So yeah,
and so well. It you installed that. Is it tongue and groove, or is it?
Yeah, it's tongue and grooved.
Wow.
So
that's been a lot of. That looks like a lot of work. Because it's not a single pitch either. It's a fairly detailed, different angles and big cathedral kind of ceiling.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of work in the floors and the ceilings.
Yeah,
but it's worth it because it's a lovely feature. And I suppose I'm being a timber person. That's often one of the conversations I have with customers and the word go really is. How much timber is going to actually be in this build? So someone came to us with a concrete house. I tell them we're the wrong builders.
Right, right.
At the end of the day, we like to use sustainable materials as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
They're nice to use, and they've got a lovely feel about them when the building's finished as well. So that's quite important.
Yeah. 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 And I think that's a really important message as well, to know where your sweet spot is and who your clients are as much as who they aren't, and you know, passing them on to someone else. Cause it's good to know what you want to specialize in.
Yeah. That's really important, I think, because you need to know, and I say to people from the word go is you need to have to work with me. And I have to need to work with you because it's normally a 2-year relationship.
Yep.
And then the other thing is then if they haven't already got a designer or architect, then we guide them towards the ones we think are going to be suitable for that particular project. And they've got to, everyone's got to work on the same page, because, you know, you've all got to try and take out of what the customer's got in their head what we're trying to achieve as well, and make sure that we all end up on the same page, that the customer ends up with the best product or building or home that's going to suit them going forwards.
Yeah. Do you think you'll do another passive house?
We're working on a couple at the moment with different people on different formats. The sticking point on a few of these projects recently have been the pricing, and this, I suppose, going back to what I was saying earlier about that, the difference between what a group house builder is doing on a minimum code to a passive is so different. And often people they have conversations with other people before they get to us, and they have this expectation
of
what it's going to cost them. I suppose on our process, when someone comes to us, they say, well, what's it going to cost? And so I can't tell you at the moment. It depends on where we go.
Yeah.
And what we will do, we'll work through with you to get your section. We'll work through with you to get some concept drawings. When you get some concept drawings, we can talk through how you're actually going to, we're going to build that building and what materials are, but we won't actually give you a fixed price till we've actually sent it off to our, we've got some working drawings, sent off to our quantity surveyor, got it back, and then we'll give you a fixed price.
Yeah.
Because there's so many variants and people go, oh, what's it going to cost per meter? Well, I could give you a meter for minimum building code with products that aren't that sustainable and probably could be high maintenance. But if you want to go with a building that's going to be cost you less on the life of the building, then it's going to be a bit different. And I'd rather you spend a bit more money up front than over the next 15 years, your energy costs and your maintenance costs are going to get put through the roof.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't afford to run your heat pump if you put heat pumps in, or you can't afford to your cedar, you can't afford to recoat that every 18 months, all those other bits and pieces. So you need to have those conversations from the word go. And then once you've got down the track, you can give people a good idea.
And like you said at the start, they're not comparing apples and apples. They're comparing what you'd quite rightly describe as a shed or a garage to a effective, comfortable, healthy home.
Well, that's very true. And I suppose the minimum we will build about the last 6 years now has been a 140 stud with a cavity on the outside, ideally bigger, and then the minimum bats would want to put if or insulation in the roof is 7.2, and so most people are doing 3.6 around here.
Yeah,
our walls are a minimum of 4.1. Well, most people are doing a 2.4 to 2.6. So when you start having those conversations, and then we say, well, the minimum windows we would use would be a firmly broken windows. We won't use any else.
Yeah.
And I think if the whole country was a minimum firmly broken double glazed window sweep, the cost from that to a triple glazed decent window wouldn't be so dramatic. But because people are using standard double glazed aluminium windows, that price into a decent triple glazed window is quite considerable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. The gap is so huge because the standard is that they're using as a benchline is so low that it seems like just such a big, well, it is a big jump.
Yeah, exactly. And as a country, I personally would love to see our building code lifted, because it would actually save the country money in the long run on their health bills, because we've got so many people with asthma and other bits and pieces, because they all think, oh, she'll be all right, just put an extra jumper on in the winter. Well, that's all well and good. But if you've got mold growing inside your house on your walls, or you've got too much internal moisture, which is quite common on most houses, if you read the brands research that they've done on a minimum build house, then that's costing us as a help on the health side of things a fortune. Well, if we could actually bring the homes that people live in the standard up, that would actually save money on the health. It would save money on energy. It's a win-win situation all round.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hope that many more people do get inspiration from what you have done there, Ian, and do build that way. It's great to know that there is that capacity there. There's lots of capability in the industry, so there's no reason not to, other than just that mindset of understanding what you actually want to achieve. Where's the best place for people to find out more and to check out what you're doing?
Well, just find us on the web, chamberlainhomes.nz, and you'll come across our website, And then you can email us from there. Always happy to talk. Because at the end of the day, we have to look after our own industry. And so the better we do across our own industry, educating everyone in the industry and all our customers, the better it is for all of us.
Yeah. Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot, Ian. Really appreciate your time.
Brilliant. Thanks, Matthew.
And that was Ian Chamberlain there, the founder and chief carpenter, cabinet maker, crafter at Chamberlain Homes. Do check out his portfolio, and particularly that energy efficient home in Taupo with a beautiful ceiling, and some of the other work that he's done. Like I said at the intro, a tribute to his experience and craftsmanship as a cabinet maker and joiner. You can find him at chamberlainhomes.nz. I'll put those links in the show notes, which you can find at homestylegreen.com/212 for episode 212. Also, a quick thanks again to the sponsors for this week's episode, that is Enduro Builders. Find Jackson and his team at endurobuilders.com.a for beautiful, stunning homes in Australia. And also, if you're looking to get some passive house design work done or some energy modelling, thermal bridge analysis, that sort of thing, check out Lab Design. That's labdesign.com.au, and they can help you out with all your design service needs. Thank you very much for tuning in. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh. Now go make a better place to live.